This is the News at 5 on WRKC Wilkes-Barre.
Good evening. This is the WRKC News at 5. I'm Program Director Nick Rotundo. Thank you for joining us. Tonight's top stories include the Daraja Children's Choir's concert, the Interfaith Fast with the King's Community, and the Syrian refugee crisis. The Daraja Children of Africa performed a free concert of the children, a traditional song and dance, yesterday on the third floor of the Sheehy Farmer Campus Center. Station manager Jessica Mulligan viewed and recapped the show.
In Swahili, the word Daraja means bridge. A bridge is a means by which people are able to cross from one place to another, and the Daraja Children's Choir of Africa has certainly crossed over a very long distance. This choir is made up of 18 children from Kaihura, Uganda, which is located in East Africa. The community of Kaihura partnered with 410 Bridge in 2013 and now has access to clean water, education programs for youth, and a business training startup program. The children in the choir are training in mentorship and discipleship programs during their tour so that when they return home in 6 months, they will be better prepared to be young leaders in their community. Many local organizations helped to bring Daraja to northeastern Pennsylvania for the first time to perform a free concert. And one representative, Steve, helped to get the audience excited at the beginning of the program, held at 7 p.m. in the Snyder Room of the Sheehy Farmer Campus Center on Tuesday night at King's College. After the choir's first song, a new speaker joined the choir on stage and helped to introduce them.
Daraja is a Swahili word. It means bridge. So now you can go and tell your friends, your family, and everybody that you know at least one Swahili word. You're that much smarter. So you know that the Daraja means bridge. That's exactly where we get to be. I'm going to share some love over here, too. Okay? We're going to go back and forth. We're a bridge of what God is doing over their communities, sharing their love and joy. Man, come on, we're going to experience some joy in this place tonight. It's going to be fun. And we really, like as Steve said, we really need you guys to participate in that joy, okay? Because that's what it's all about, us enjoying God's presence in this place and just having a good time and just worshiping Him. And just we're going to see God move in great ways. And so we need everybody to be a part of that.
He then gave each performer an opportunity to introduce him or herself.
Gun.
Next, the audience was given the chance to learn how the children see Uganda as being different from places they have seen in the United States.
And we're going to learn a little bit about Uganda tonight, a little bit what's different from here and some fun things. So, Daraja, this is what we need, okay? I need somebody to share with me something back home that we don't do here. You do it back home, but we don't do it here. Or can you share a greeting and what you do back home that we don't do here?
In Uganda, when we are greeting people, we kneel down, but here you don't kneel down, just you say hi.
And then also, this is where it gets super confusing, because in their village in Kaihura, everybody has one of 12 names. No joke. Everybody. So, who can give me one of the pet names that you have? What's your pet name?
Abuali.
Abuali. Do you have any other Abuali's? See? Could you imagine? A Okay, so what about food here in America? You guys have eaten some fun foods. What are food that you love in America?
Pizza.
I've heard that you guys like pizza here too, right? All right, what else? Anybody?
Hamburger.
All right, and then Agnes, where are you at? That was you, right? Agnes, can you share with everybody what you found that's different here in America? She finds it very funny. So if everybody could just turn around and look at the red signs above the door. She thinks it's funny that you need to know what the exits are. It's a door.
The free concert was over an hour in length and featured the choir singing mostly in English. They shared individual prayer time with members of the audience and had choreography for every number. The children were said to have been overjoyed with their love of Jesus through their smiles, vocals, and dance. For WRKC News at 5, I am station manager Jessica Mulligan.
The Interfaith Fastathon for Syrian refugees was held Monday night in order to promote awareness towards those who are seeking homes, food, and justice in the world. Social media and promotions director John Flynn was able to attend the dinner and listen to stories told by students, refugees, and faculty about the event.
Syria has been at civil war since 2011, and a big element of it is refugees leaving their homeland from Syria to find safety around the world, and many have found homes here in the United States. The second annual Interfaith Fast with the community this past Monday of Kings raised awareness of the Syrian refugee crisis as more than 200 students and teachers donated fasting time and money for the cause. Mr. Bowen, the director of the Cheval Center, spoke about the purpose.
What we can do is promote a sense of interfaith cooperation around a common goal. We have many different traditions and student body populations represented and staff populations represented at this dinner. The idea behind it is that one thing that we all share in common is a belief in the goodness of mankind, and that service is something that we all hold dear. Help those in need is something that we all hold dear. So we want to have to promote that cause and to continue to increase a sense of interfaith understanding.
Sophomore political science and theology student James McDonough compared the current crisis to another from 1846, which was, of course, the Irish potato famine. He explained why the same spirit prompted him to fast.
Irish immigrants left their country, the home they loved, to seek a better life for them and their children. They risked everything to cross the North Atlantic, to have the mere opportunity to live a better life. In America especially, they are met with harsh anti-immigrant, anti-Irish, and anti-Catholic sentiment. They were seen as foreigners who never could and never would become part of American society. My ancestors came to a country that disliked them for being foreign, for being poor, for being Catholic, yet they still came. They still saw America holding a better life for their families, both immediate and distantly extended. I fast and fundraise for Syrian refugees because I see in them the same spirit that drove my ancestors to immigrate. I see people who leave the home they love. I see people who are denigrated for being foreign, for being Muslim.
First-year Saudi Arabian student Wenin Zafrani talked about how she lost her parents in Syria as she vowed to assist the migrants.
At that point, I decided to help every person who needs help and work hard to give them the help they need. And as a women, we are for all feelings of caring about others. No matter your gender or your color or your religion, we all have the same reason to help others. Just to make them smile and give them hope again.
Nashwa Ajabayan, a mother of four and a Syrian refugee, praised certain organizations for providing a smooth transition from Syria to the United States.
A couple of years ago, Syrian refugees started coming to the amazing country. I started helping them and worked with Catholic Service to help get the refugees what they need. We found housing and for them, and provided all the necessities for them to start a new life in the U.S. I would like to thank Catholic Service and everything they are doing for the Syrian refugees. I also thank God for giving me strength and ability to help other people.
Dr. Janice Thompson, Associate Professor and Theology Department Chairperson, described the efforts in making the Center Faith Fast happen.
I think it's our students that give it the energy. They're the ones who, we've had a great planning team of students. There's members of the Saudi Student Club. There are activist students on campus. There are people who work in campus ministry, who work in theology. There are students, all kinds of energy from different directions. RAs have helped.
Yeah. For the WRKC News at 5, I'm Social Media and Promotions Director John Flynn.
Anaz Alous, a Syrian refugee, was invited to speak on Tuesday in the post-UPAC room about his personal experience in the Syrian civil war and his life in America. News director Katie Pugh sat in on the event.
The post-UPAC room hosted locally resettled Syrian refugee Anaz Alous yesterday as part of the Hunger for Justice Week. Anaz recounted his incredible story of fleeing his home in Syria after his father was injured by a tank and his brother was arrested for speaking out against the government, temporarily moving to Jordan, and then going through the vetting and settling process here in the United States. Anaz recalled his life in Syria before the war broke out.
Everything started in Syria. I will start my story about me and my family and what has happened to us. As any one of you, I was living a normal life in homeland in Syria. My city is named Homs. It's a beautiful city. And then I have a family of 7 people, my parents, 4 brothers and 1 sister. We were living a quality life in a nice house and beautiful neighborhood. The only problem was that we had no rights, no say, and no freedom in front of the government. We can't take everything in my country. If you have some problems or like that, we can't take it. Any people to arrested.
Homs was a city that was devastated early in the Syrian civil war. The siege of Homs began in May of 2011, which was a government-led assault that caused a large amount of civilian casualties due to indiscriminate shelling. Homs was an epicenter of protests against Bashar al-Assad.
And then the war, Bashar al-Assad said what have happened. All what the Syrian people asked for was for someone to listen to them and their problems in a peaceful way, but Al-Assad prevented to his people be killing them and killed another people. There was no mercy. Any innocent people were killed everywhere and the blood covered the street.
Anaz recounted what leaving Syria was like initially when his family fled to Jordan, Syria's eastern neighbor that is now at capacity with refugees.
We left everything behind us, money, houses, cars, and of course our biggest loss was our lovely human homeland, Syria. I can't tell you this problem because if you take everything behind you, if you take everything, house and cars and work, and go to another country, and you don't know everything for this country, and you can't find the house or friend or work or like that, it's really bad, really hard. And you have family, children, how you can take food or money for them, you know, or school or like that. You have a lot of things, you know.
Anaz also mentioned the long and thorough process of applying for refugee status in the United States.
We lived about 3 years in Jordan before coming to the United States. The UN called us and interviewed us 15 times. Then they told us we will go to USA. Before coming to United States, We interviewed with my family 15 times, almost 15 times, in 11 months. Because it checked up very well for my family and his family.
After that process was over, Anas and his family were able to move to the United States and chose to settle in Wilkes-Barre. Anas discussed his life once he came to America.
We all know America and the dream land. So hope started to shame again for me and my family once we arrived in America. I started work here on the second day because when we lived to another country, we don't have anything. No house, no money, no friends, no English. This because you need to take the language. And after that, I work in a restaurant because you need to take some money for rent, for take a few things in here. I was working as a barber in Syria and Jordan. So I am trying to be a barber here in USA, but I still need help because I don't have a licensed barbershop.
For the WRKC News at 5, I'm News Director Katie Pugh.
Coming up next, we'll hear this week's edition of the Business Beat, a sports spotlight on King's College junior quarterback Zach Whitehead, and the weather for the rest of the week.
You're tuned to WRKC, Radio King's College, 2015 winner of the Reader's Choice Award from Diamond City Magazine for Best College Radio Station. We are Northeastern Pennsylvania's most honored college radio station.
Hamilton was adopted from a rescue in 2008. He really likes to be around people. I get out my mat and I'm doing a downward dog and he's underneath. He's quite the pug about town. He gets invited to a lot of parties. He knows he's a pretty big deal. Look at this little face. How could you not love him?
Hamilton the Pug, Instagram star and shelter pet. Amazing adoption stories start in shelters. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
The News at 5 continues on 88.5 WRKC, Wilkes-Barre.
The King's College Monarch football team's season concluded last Saturday when Kings defeated arch-rival Wilkes University in the annual Mayor's Cup game. The 2016 Monarch football season has been the year of the quarterback. Junior quarterback Zach Whitehead took over the Monarch offense, leading the Monarchs to a 5-5 record while breaking six school records. Whitehead spoke about how his off-season preparation got him ready for the season.
My accuracy was one, you know, every throw, you know, not just like the short intermediate throws, but my long passes, I thought they got better as the year went on. A couple more chances down the field, which I think helped us out. Tyler Maroney and I, you know, worked throughout the entire summer, so we had a great chemistry coming to camp. I knew where he was going to be pretty much every play, and not just him, but, you know, Palmer and Marcus and Corey and, you know, all the guys. We had a really good chemistry this year, and, you know, we had to work extremely hard in the spring to be on the same page with the new offense and everything like that. And then, you know, in the summer, we threw here and there, you know, being all over the place, you know, it was kind of hard, but we still got together a couple times here and there and got the throw, which was vital, kind of kept that chemistry going, and then kind of just all came together, you know, once August came here.
With all the training and practice Whitehead has gone through, he has had to overcome some adversity in regards to injuries.
This year I had, like, you know, a sprained AC joint in my throwing shoulder. I had a Liz Frank sprain. I had plantar fasciitis. I had foot sprain. I had, what else did I have? I had, like, something wrong with my elbow. I had something wrong with, like, my hip. I had something wrong with my knee. Yeah, pretty much anything you can say happened, I had something happen to that body part.
So you'd say a lot of ice bath therapies.
A lot of ice, a lot of treatment, a lot of going into the trainers and the clinics, you know, throughout school days and in between classes and stuff like that. But, you know, it's a grind, that's for sure, and I don't mind it at all.
Whitehead was very modest when speaking about the school broken records.
If you would have told me that coming into the season, I would have said you're crazy. But, you know, it was pretty cool, honestly. And, you know, also Coach Hartranft, you know, he had most of the records that I did break. So earlier on in the season when I broke a couple of his records, he told me, you know, broke another one or something like that. So it was at least him being on the staff, it was kind of funny because, you know, I always had a little running joke with him. Yeah, that kind of made it a little bit better too. And, you know, I couldn't have gotten there but without my teammates. So I got to give those guys, you know, the most credit. And, you know, offense and defense, my O-line, my receivers, you know, just made plays the entire season and only possible because of them.
Whitehead shared his two favorite records that he broke.
Yards in a game against Lycoming. I think that was probably one of the best ones to do. You know, it was week two of the season. I was at a place that we never won before, Lycoming. We beat them there, so that made it even better. And plus, I beat, you know, like I said, Coach Hartranft, Tyler Hartranft's record again. You know, he was laughing about it. So that was probably one of my favorite ones. Plus, we had a great day offensively. Tyler Maroney had like 10 catches for like 170 yards. That game kind of sticks out in my mind record-wise. You know, I also like breaking the touchdown pass. Is one. So I think that was pretty cool too, one of those two.
After the Mayor's Cup game, Whitehead spoke about winning team MVP.
Nah, I really didn't think I was going to get it. I wanted everyone else to get it besides me because, you know, they were the ones who got me, you know, all the yards and all the, you know, all the touchdowns and everything like that. So those, you know, Tyler Maroney and Palmer and, you know, Marcus, all the receivers, you know, they were the ones who got me that. And O-line played phenomenal that game and they just straight up dominated. I mean, I barely got touched and the times I did get touched was my own fault. So, you know, that was my fault. And, you know, the O-line did a great job this whole season, especially that game. Got to give so much credit to them. And I was extremely happy to win the award. Shaking Father Ryan's hand at midfield on the W was just awesome. You know, winning the game just tops it off.
Whitehead said that the Monarchs are a team to look out for next season.
Just be ready for us next year. I think we got big things in store for next year. And, you know, like I said, we'll just work extremely hard this offseason, get back in the weight room and film room. We got to have a great spring ball, you know, get better every position, every group, everybody, top to bottom, and, you know, get a good recruiting class in here so we can go all out for 2017.
For the WRKC News at 5, I'm Sports Director Dan Stokes.
This is Joshua Frankevich with your King's Business Beat. The U.S. in review. The election of Donald Trump, released since the election, has been relatively light. The National Federation of Business presented a generally optimistic tone from small businesses in October as the measure increased to its highest point in 2016. The Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey report reiterated that the labor market was steady in September as the economy continues towards full employment. Voluntary resignations are on the rise, which signals confidence among workers that they can find another job and generally results in wage increases. The labor market is increasingly a top concern for small businesses looking to fill open positions or retain talent. Donald Trump's surprising victory will have little direct impact in the near term, but will likely have a more significant impact on the medium-term outlook. The initial shock of the election and the uncertainty surrounding new policy objectives will likely bring about volatility in the markets. At the same time, relief that the election is finally over could boost consumer confidence temporarily, though the impact is usually short-lived and does not historically flow through to actual spending decisions. Consumer spending is more likely impacted by underlying fundamentals, which appear to be mostly sound. Decisions about timing of business investment could be impacted as policy priorities of the new administration become clearer. Close attention will be paid to how Trump goes about building his cabinet and relationships with congressional leadership. Uncertainty is likely to rattle the markets, but it is expected that the impact is to be short-lived. The financial markets will most likely sink with Trump's economic policies of lower taxes, infrastructure and defense spending, regulatory reform, and a new deal on international trade. The near-term forecast is largely unchanged, as time will be needed for President-elect Trump to formulate new policies and move them through Congress. The impact is more likely to become apparent in 2018 rather than 2017. Initiatives to reform trade and immigration will also take time to formulate and implement. Initiatives to reform trade and immigration will also take time to formulate and implement. The net result should produce a slight near-term drag on growth and push inflation and interest rates higher. It is also the commonly held view of most economists that the Fed is still poised to raise rates in December, as the market reaction to Trump's victory appears somewhat settled. This notion is backed by Eric Rosengren, president of the Boston Federal Reserve Bank, who on Monday said things were hopefully in order to raise the rates. The Global Review. Chinese exports struggle and worry in Germany. Mixed readings released in China this week confirm that despite slumping exports, the Chinese trade surplus continued to grow, extending a trend that has been in place over the past 2 years. For the second month in a row, Chinese exports fell. This development was one of the few disappointing reports from China, which recently economic indicators have generally been improving in recent weeks. The value of the country's exports has trended lower since early 2015, a trend that may get worse in 2017 should protectionist policies policies advocated by President-elect Trump during the election begin to take form in actual policy. For the trade balances in China, an offset to export weakness has been the fact that imports have been hit even harder due to the collapse in commodity prices, thus explaining the swelling trade surplus. CPI inflation in China rose slightly to 2.1% in October, which is in line with the 2.0% average CPI inflation rate over the past 4 years. Meanwhile, in Germany, the manufacturing sector is under pressure after an August pickup in orders activity as well as a surge in industrial production that same month. Both measures fell even more than had been expected in September. Factory orders fell 0.6% in September, and industrial production fell 1.8%, giving back more than half the prior month's gain. September industrial production figures for other economies elsewhere in Europe also trickled in this week. The Eurozone industrial production report is scheduled for release on Monday of next week. This report will shed more light onto the Eurozone economy's health. And this has been your King's Business Beat with Joshua Frankevich.
And now the weather. Tonight will be rainy with a low of 43. Tomorrow will be partly cloudy with a high of 58. And Friday will be sunny with a high of 67. Be sure to vote for King's College WRKC for Best College Radio Station on the Electric City Poll. The link to vote is scrantontimes.secondstreetapp.com. The Kings players also start up their second and final week of production of Whose Wives Are They Anyway tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Be sure to stay tuned for Geek Week with Chris and Nick at 6 p.m. This has been the WRKC News at 5. I'm Program Director Nick Rotundo. Have a wonderful week.
This has been the News at 5 on WRKC, Radio Kings College, Wilkes-Barre.